shit. Make him laugh, bet you all tired of hearing the constant blather. In the end, you just wanna know that laughing matters. From entrepreneurs to Fortune 500, humor makes the world go round. You didn't know? It's a fit for a pro, like a roll with spaghetti, to keep your culture light when times are heavy. So sit back and relax as you raise the bar, when it all comes down to the ha ha ha. Yeah, make him laugh, huh? You make him laugh, make him laugh.
Welcome to Laughing Matters, a podcast like none you'll ever hear, and you should, your ears should thank you for that. At Laughing Matters, we explore the power of humor and laughter in a world sorely lacking both, and how leaders from all walks of life use humor to take the edge off. I am your co-host, Steve Cody, CEO of Peppercom, not Peppercorn. And I am joined, as usual, by my co-host, the long-suffering Paul Mershon. I say long-suffering because his Bronx Bombers are in last place in the American League East. Welcome, Paul.
Thank you for the welcome, Steve, and for referencing the Yankees being in last place. You know, my motto has always been to try to be like you, and I guess I took that too close to heart because now my team is in a familiar position and your team, the Mets, are. So that's unfortunate, but I'll keep trying to be like you in other ways.
Oh, you always have a comeback, Paul. That's the beauty of it. So our, I would use the word guest, but you'll understand why I don't. Our companion, our soulmate today is no stranger to using humor on the job. In fact, she's written three books about it. Kathy Cloete's guest is a keynote speaker, author, and podcast host with over 20 years, I'm guessing that's either 21 or 22, but over 20 years of stand-up comedy, sketch, and improv experience. Kathy led tech product marketing and comms teams for almost two decades in Silicon Valley while doing comedy 5 to 6 nights a week. Wow. She realized work didn't need to suck, so she left in 2009 to start her own amazing company, Keeping It Human. Her big mission is to help people and companies use humor to fuel healthier employees and workplaces, bolder communications and stories, and more connected leaders. She believes humor is way bigger than just being funny, and she wants to create a humor revolution at work and in our lives. I, too, want to partake in that revolution. Kathy, we are thrilled to have you here today.
Hey, guys. Oh, my God. It's great to be here. Well, we share that. We want to, let's upend the world. Let's shake that status quo up.
Yes, I hear you want a revolution, Kathy. So yeah. Anyway, in so many ways, Keeping It Human and Peppercom are kind of kindred spirits, if not souls, because we certainly share the same values and beliefs as you do. You help businesses tell their stories using the tenets of humor, comedy, improv. You help them infuse humor to benefit their workplace culture and strengthen leadership. Why do you think that up until now, business leaders have been relatively reluctant to use the qualities a comedian harnesses on stage?
I think they still are a little bit reluctant. There's still pockets of reluctance. I think we look at humor and we go, oh my God, I have to be funny and then I'll fail and I'll be judged and I'll offend everybody. And I think it's because we misunderstand what humor is. But also too, I think, you know, humor is a gray area. And when you think about it, really doesn't have to be so scary. You and I know that. Everybody here on this podcast, you know, Paul, Steve, we all know that. But I think there's still a lot of fear because it's a lot of art. And when you deal with a lot of companies that deal with science and come out of tech or, you know, pharma, whatever these, you know, there's a science and there's management science. And, you know, humor is an art. And sometimes you got to explore and you got to fail. And we don't like to fail. And we got to try stuff. But failure is not fatal. It is not a bad thing. It is learning. It is growing. It is experimenting. And I think there is more recognition now because of COVID. We went through a pandemic and everything sucked and people, you know, lost their lives and people hurt. And I think we had to take stock of what was working and what wasn't. And I think the pandemic was really, I think it was a moment of reality for a lot of people, you know?
Yeah. No question. And obviously, anxiety, depression, yes. Isolation,
loneliness.
Mental health. Yeah, loneliness. I think 51% of Gen Zers say they suffer from some form of depression. So it's certainly my belief that any business leader should want to put a smile on her or his direct reports just because they have nowhere else to turn.
Yes, absolutely. Look, we're asking a lot of employees. You know, there's layoffs now, as we knew there would be because of, you know, business being affected by COVID. We're also in an age of AI, and there's a lot of things being displaced, and there's a lot of uncertainty. People having high anxiety. I think we're talking about mental health in ways we didn't years ago. I mean, it was always there. We just never talked about it. And I think what finally I think we're seeing is leaders, the really great leaders, you guys, are getting it, and they're going, well, hell, we have to talk about this stuff because it's real for people. And the really smart leaders are getting it, that it is a mental health and mental well-being issue. It's not just a business issue.
Yeah. And it's funny, you mentioned earlier just the fact that there are still some folks who are reluctant, organizations are reluctant to bring humor in. But then there's the success stories where we see maybe they were reluctant at first, but because of the great work that, you know, folks like you do, they're starting to see that there is room for humor. And without naming names of your former clients or former companies that you worked with, could you tell us a story about any organization or individual that you worked with that started out with almost no humor, but then ended up blossoming as a result of the work that you did with them?
So I will say that I think that it's such a big question. And I have to say that unless you're like Toxic and you're Enron or a couple other companies, most organizations aren't lacking in humor. They're just in their own way. They're not lacking humor. The humor's there. They just don't know how to express it. It's blocked. They're creatively blocked. They're humor blocked. They're humor constipated. They're humor constipated. That's all it is. But it's really about, it is, but it really is there. And I see that laughing because, I mean, it's true. It is there. It's just they need permission to express it. So I'll say that there's a couple large tech companies out my way who, I was dealing with a lot of their technical people, and technical people want to explain everything. And for them, it's, you know, reverse engineering, and they're dealing with algorithms and bits and zeros and ones, right? And that's what engineers do. And to get out of their own way and realize that there's a whole language for innovation and fun and, you know, using improv and stand-up, we can yes and each other. We can have much more organic laughter, and we can get out of our own way. And I think what for them, what we know to be true, for them, it was revelatory. They were like, oh my God, this exists in the world, and people can yes and each other, and we can actually have fun and come up with new ideas, and we can use more humor and have it be organic as well as intentional. Oh my God, this was, I think it was an aha for them. And so the humor was always there. I think they just needed ways to sort of help each other, have each other's backs, make it safer to express. And when you have that psychological safety and that language for it, people feel freer because they don't feel judged.
That makes sense. Yep. And I unashamedly steal material from any and every comedian, and humor blocked is a keeper. It's a keeper. That is. I love it, Kathy. I love it.
Kathy, if they were humor constipated, would that mean that you offered a humor diuretic? Is that how it would work?
Or? Well, here's the thing. I help them do what they got to do, right? It's like, I think people are their own worst enemy, but they don't realize it. And it's really getting out of your own way.
You see yourself as the Dougalocks of business?
Well, that is trademarked, so no. But if you wanted to call me, let's talk product placements, if that is what.
Absolutely.
It's funny. I call myself a lot of things. I've been called a lot of things. I was called Mrs. Maisel for Leaders by a client. I was called the Saturday Night Live of team leadership. I've been called a lot of things, probably that too. I think it's just really, it is helping people realize that some of it is their own fears, but there has to be a language for understanding those fears so that they deal with it. Because I think that's the biggest fear. You ask people why they're so scared of public speaking, and why public speaking or comedy is on their high list of fears. And it's just, I'm afraid I'll make a mistake, I'll be judged. Those are the things that if you're going to get out of your own way, you have to have honest conversations about.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. One of the counterintuitive things for me when I read your bio was your background. You began your career as a software analyst and a marketer before launching your own business. And you are of, by, and for Silicon Valley, and having represented a few Silicon Valley companies I was going to say behemoths, but one of them is no longer a behemoth. But I don't associate laughter. I don't associate laughter and humor necessarily, especially with the guy running the company formerly known as Twitter. Anyway, I don't associate that brand or that region of the country with humor or laughter. So help us through your life and professional journey. How did you get from there to here?
I think it would shock people. I never fit in. I was always sort of island of misfit toys, right? It was like, I don't want to be, you know, Santa's workshop. I want to be a dentist, right? I always felt that way. And I was, because I was the person that, didn't start off as a analyst. I started off in product. I was in product. And then, you know, at night, right out of college, I was doing stand-up. I did go to Second City Sketch. I'm a sketch trained sketch comedian as well. And I would say that I always knew that I would do that. And so pretty much right away, I always felt like I have all these ideas. My brain just lights up at all this stuff. And here I was in tech and I was like, this isn't fun. It sucks. And there's better ways to do that. And so I started to kind of bring some of those principles into work. It wasn't always easy. As I sort of got bigger teams and as I worked my way up and had more control over, you know, team leadership, I could infuse that in my teams. And I did. I thought, well, as long as I control how I run my team, I'm going to make it fun here. So I always did that. Pretty soon people noticed and they were like, well, Kathy seems to like make it fun over there. What is she doing? What is she doing different? And the only thing I was really doing different was making it a safe place. Long before we talked about psychological safety, I was trying to make it a safe place for expression, for creativity, for failing and learning. As long as people avoided certain topics, you know what I'm saying? But if people tried things that didn't work, that was okay. That was okay in my book because it was all about innovation. So I kind of learned, I got away with, as I got more credibility and, you know, status, I could try different things. But I always felt there was more I could do and there was, you know, tech isn't known for humor. You're absolutely right. And yet I know for a fact, here's the irony. I don't know if you know this, that years ago, the CEO for Twitter, back in the day when they had leadership, there was a gentleman, Dick Costolo, and Dick Costolo took improv. And he talked about it. And he and I bumped into each other at an event one time. And he and I had this lovely conversation and he got it. And I think What I realized is that there were pockets in tech where some really innovative minds got it because they realized that improv and stand-up were all about innovation. Mm-hmm. You fail, you try, you learn, you write jokes, that didn't work. You keep at it. It's in itself, it is an act of radical prototyping and innovation, the very thing that Silicon Valley does. Mm-hmm. That's what we do on a stage. Mm-hmm. And the smart people got it. So I found pockets of receptivity, but eventually it was like, if I'm really going to do this thing, I have to leave here because to have true freedom to be able to do it in a way that I think lifts everybody. So I was sort of, I can't say that I ever really felt like I fit in. I'm nerdy. I'm visibly nerdy from space, y'all. But there wasn't a lot. And let's be clear. You all see me. Maybe your listeners won't. I'm 5'3". I'm blonde. I went to Stanford. I'm educated. I'm also nerdy. I'm also a trained improviser and stand-up comedian, and I teach it. There are not women who look like this in Silicon Valley. Can we say that? Let's just have that moment. There are people that do not look like me. I do not look like most leaders. And in fact, you know, that is a problem. And so for me, I realized if I was going to do it the way I needed to do it, I would have to leave. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a good segue into our next point, our next question, Kathy. It's about humor and women in the workplace and in executive positions. So I know you've spoken with a number of women's groups. And I think a short while ago, you were actually the closing keynote for the Women's Center Annual Leadership Conference. It's an event that brings together over 1,000 women and men leaders across the country to learn about topics that are important to women. So we'd love to hear your perspectives, especially on the concept of whether a stereotype still exists for women to avoid being too funny in order to be taken seriously in the business world. Does that still exist? And if so, how do you overcome that double standard and that pressure?
So there is still that. I mean, if you haven't been following the news and for folks listening, women will automatically be radically nodding till their heads fall off. And and you know, look, it still exists in especially in a lot of look, we don't see a lot of women in the Fortune 500 in the C-suite in these times. I mean, we still have a problem, and it is true. It is there. So we still have these stereotypes. And one of the stereotypes is that, women in humor, the funny woman in the office. There is a little bit of a backsplash. And the research is very clear that women pay a penalty for being funny. And yet we also pay a penalty if we're not. So it means that for some of us, we just have to be mindful that, look, you know, when you have status and credibility, you get away with a little bit more. But it also, I want to say to women, look, the most important thing you can do is once you establish competence, you have to exude warmth. And humor is emotional intelligence. It's warmth. It's EQ. So there's a lot of research on this. Ladies, bring your funny, but again, in balance. We have to do it in balance. Is there still a penalty? Sure. Is there still bias against women and people of color in the workplace? Absolutely. But it doesn't mean we should leave it at home, because I think the way that we change the workplace, you know, guys, I think we change it by showing up and blowing up those stereotypes, not by leaving it at home.
Yeah.
But just understand that balance. Yeah.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. And one other thing, a trend, which I hope is an ongoing trend at your alma mater, the Stanford, the Graduate School of Business. I'm sure you're familiar with Jennifer and Naomi, who teach a three-course, an elective on stand-up for MBA students, which I think is absolutely brilliant. One of our colleagues at DePaul, who spends her nights at Second City, teaches a stand-up and improv undergraduate class. Do you think we'll see more colleges and universities embracing? Obviously, the schools of arts and film, et cetera, have always had acting. But do you see stand-up and improv becoming more a part of the curriculum as more colleges and universities wake up? Or is the academic world just a laggard in general?
Actually, I think the academic world is smart, and they're kind of in some ways ahead of business. I think it's great. So when I was in business school, they didn't have it. It didn't exist So I wasn't able to, but I was already doing it at night. It was one of those rare animals that I was already, you know, doing stage work. So I think it's great that they're doing it. I think we absolutely need to humanize MBAs. I mean, we were cranking out a lot of MBAs that were like, you know, they could do spreadsheets, they could lead, they could, you know, calculate ROIs, but they couldn't even have, you know, empathetic conversations with the teams they led. I mean, we were cranking out the wrong kinds of skills, and I think those skills are invaluable, but so are the people skills. So I think it's great. I think schools are, in some cases, ahead of the curve of business in some places, and I think that's wonderful. I do know that I've had people reach out to me from different universities, and they're mandating, even at the undergraduate level, at least improv courses, and I think that's amazing. I think that's cool. Wonderful. It should be mandatory. It should be. I think that's great.
Awesome. That's really great to hear. And Kathy, I wanted to close by asking you a question we love to ask all of our guests. If you could share with us an embarrassing or cringeworthy moment from either your personal or professional life, and anything that you could look back on and laugh at now.
So you're asking me to narrow it down then?
Yeah, that's just the one or two. Yeah.
Oh my God, so many. Let's see. Cringeworthy in like in just a generic way, or just cringeworthy as in like, you know, I don't know. It'd be hard to narrow down. I think cringeworthy when I first started doing stand-up, and it was like right after college, my very first kind of stand-up stuff. It's like a few years out of school and then doing stand-up. I think we all learn, right? It's like my jokes were so hacky and so cringeworthy, and I think that's how people learn. So if your early stuff is not cringeworthy, something's wrong. It should be cringeworthy to you if you've evolved.
I think that's obviously that's sage advice. And one of the things that stand up and failing miserably at stand up taught me is the power of silence, and also how to deal with a distracted audience or hecklers. And yeah. so I have learned to use those as weapons, if you will, mm-hmm. in business. So, you know, if one of my big ideas is met by silence, I have a way to leverage that, as I'm sure you do. Same thing with somebody who's multitasking on a phone when I'm trying to say something that's really important from my perspective. All those stand up and improv skills serve me and serve us so well in yeah. business.
Every day. I mean, you asked you, I know earlier we were talking a little bit about, you know, even storytelling, and I think comedy is the best storytelling I know.
Mm-hmm.
It is storytelling. It, I mean, as you know, if you've done it, it's, you know, that is the moment of truth with your audience. You know, you're being revelatory. And I think in that moment of truth and imperfection, you're connected to people. And that's really the big aha. Like, don't be afraid of it. You don't have to be perfect. And that's really, I think the scary part is it requires us to be a little bit vulnerable. I mean, I can certainly do humor that has nothing to do with me, but you'll notice if you do that, the audience is like, I don't know anything about that yeah. person. But the mm-hmm. minute you, you know, like I've been married over 20 years to my husband, right? Marriage is hard. I have no relationship advice. I don't believe in divorce. Murder. Yeah. Yes. And I know just by the people who laugh hard that they've been in long-term relationships and they know because that's truth. You know the truth when you hear it. So don't be afraid to, in your storytelling, because comedy is that, to show the imperfection, show the human frustration, show the, be a little bit revelatory. And it may seem a little bit vulnerable. It really, you don't have to, like, you know, show everything. But I think in those little moments of truth, people go, I get that. I relate to that. And that's what you're looking to do. You know, if you read Steve Martin's Born Standing Up book, I don't know if you read Born Standing Up. It's so brilliant. And, yeah. you know, one of the things I loved about what he said is that for 18 years, he was a top comedian, but it took him 14 years of sweat equity and 4 years on top. He said it wasn't 18 years on top, people. I remind you, for 14 years, I sucked. I refined. I was hack. As soon as I got rid of anything that wasn't me, then it was like, ta-da. But he toiled for 14 years, and he was very honest about that. Don't be afraid to be cringe. Embrace the cringe. Embrace the imperfection. Honestly, I think people stop. The minute it gets hard, people get afraid. And I don't want that for you. I want you to go, that's human. We all suck at first. Embrace the suck. It's okay.
All right. I'm going to steal that one, too. Embrace the suck.
Thanks, Kathy. And everyone who's listening, all right, my 4 kids included, thanks again for joining us. And join us in the next episode of Laughing Matters.